Today is March 7th. Welcome, everybody, to the Tamei HaMitzvah Shir. We're in the middle of the eighth mitzvah, the mitzvah of not leaving over from the Pesach. And we were in the middle of discussing a piece in Rav Hirsch, in which he says, for those who weren't here yesterday, on page 18b, we began with the first column there. There's a discussion there where he describes... He explains that relinquishing, I'm just going to read that first sentence again, relinquishing one's former existence never means an annihilation. Rather, it's an essential requirement for attaining, through God, a higher level of existence. Rav Hirsch's theme through this, through all karbanos, really, through all offerings, but especially the Karban Pesach, is that it's a transformation from one level. It's a sacrifice, literally. You're taking the being, and you're transforming its existence from a lower level to a higher level. So you're taking an existence of an animal and elevating it to the higher level of serving Hashem. Now this is This influences the human being in the sense that number one, the carbon represents his money and his possessions. So he's transforming his possessions to a higher level. But in addition, we know we say this sometimes in the Hiratzin that that essentially when a person brought a carbon, their intention was supposed to be that whatever is being done to the animal essentially really should have been done to the human being. The Rebbeinu Shlomo doesn't want us to give up our lives to serve him. But it's a good reminder of what would essentially be demanded of us if that weren't the case. So it's a nice exercise by taking something, specifically something that has a life, the closest form of life to a human, which is an animal. It has a life, it has nerves, it has... it feels pain, and specifically to take something that's as close to our existence as possible and to seemingly ruin it, but not, you're not really ruining it. What you're actually doing is you're transforming it into a new and, more importantly, a higher level of existence than existed before. So those people that are counted in on the carbon represent people who have proclaimed. They've symbolically nullified their existence and surrendered themselves to Hashem. So by bringing this carbon, what you're saying is essentially, this is the way I should be. This is a lesson to me. This is the way I should be. And the truth is that every human being has the ability to give up of themselves, even though not by their lives, but certainly by, we know that the desires of a person, we call, the Chachamim tell us, Ki adam hu anefesh, the desires of a person is his blood. So in a certain sense, a person has the ability to take all his desires, all his inclinations, all his wants, all his materialism, and channel that for the service of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. What's interesting here is, obviously, this is not happening to us. It's just a lesson to us. It's there as an inspiration to us. But the way Rav Hirsch portray this for us is that by ingesting the animal, which is the byproduct of this exercise, one then can elevate himself in such a way. So it's supposed to be eaten only by individuals who specifically say, I want to be part of this group, meaning I want to be one of those people who dedicate my life, surrender my life to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. And thereby, when he ingests it, he elevates himself as well in the process. Beautiful thought, and we mentioned along the way, I gave a little bit of an extra explanation today, but we mentioned along the way the Ramban, which was on page 18, which was a very, very fundamental Ramban. And the Ramban on page 18, I'm just going to summarize it outside because we don't have time to review it again inside, but basically his idea is that every form of existence in this world is there essentially to feed the next level. Which means, no, I think, David, that you have the wrong paper there. I gave.
Sheet 18.
Yeah, that's mine. That's mine there. That's mine, actually. Okay, I think. I don't think you want it. You don't want to read my chicken scratch. But the Ramban basically saying that we know that there's four forms of existence in the world. There's daimim, tzemeach, chayim, adabra. There's inanimate objects. Tzemeach is something that grows. And then there's an animal. And then there's medaber, human beings that speak. And as the Ramban says, the system, the way the Rabbi Shalom established it, and he created it, was his intention was that the inanimate objects should feed, should nourish the plant life, and plant life should then nourish animals, and animals should nourish human beings. Which means the way the Ramban presents it to us is from the perspective of the pasuk of Toiv Hashem Lakol V'Racham Aval Kol Ma'asav. The Rabbi Shalom is ultimate. Is essentially inherently good, and his rachamim, his compassion, is on everything. Which means to say that if Hashem himself dictated to us that we should shecht and eat meat, you have that by Karbonis, you have it by Shabbos and Yom Tov, you have Ein Simcha El B'Basar V'Yayin, you have to eat meat at certain times, right? So certain points at which a human being, a Ben Yisrael, is required to eat meat. So if the Rebbe Shalom demanded that, it wasn't just, okay, I'm allowing you to, but rather this is compassion. It's a form of showing compassion to the animal. Well, how do we understand that? And the Ramban's explanation was simply that because the system was set up by the Rebbe Shalom that each level should feed the next, so actually by as Rav Hirsch mentions, falls right in line with what Rav Hirsch is saying, annihilation, it's not annihilation. Annihilation is you're purging it from this world. It's rather a transformation. You're transforming its initial existence, which is as an animal with feelings and with life, etc. And you're now elevating that by giving it to nourish. You're nourishing a higher form of existence. Now again, provided we ended up with that caveat yesterday, it's very important that if you're going to do that, to feed it to the human being, it has to be that the human being is using that energy to live in a way that is a higher form of existence. Otherwise, hear this: if you want to be a vegetarian, here's a reason. If you say I don't behave properly, I don't live a higher existence than an animal. Umaysar ha'adam in abehema ayin. There is a place for I changed my party line here. There is a place for a vegetarian in Judaism. If a person is not going to behave in such a way where he's going to be living a higher form of existence than an animal, then he shouldn't be eating meat. Don't eat meat. The Gemara says, and Am Aretz should not eat meat. Why? Because the whole purpose, as the Ramban says, is you're transforming it to a higher level. You're elevating it. But if you're not going to be elevating it, then better it should remain an animal. Then don't ruin it. Very, very, very fundamental, very deep, very profound. Okay, but this Ramban that I showed you really very much is connected with this Rav Hirsch. So let's continue in Rav Hirsch. Again, I'm on source page 18b. That's with the English on it. Now we're going to go over to the second column. The top of the column says 171. Yeah?
Just one question.
Sure.
Who said that about the... I think you quoted somebody that said if the person's not...
The Gemara says that if you an Amoret should not eat meat, but I'm just saying according to the Ramban, his understanding of Karbonis in general, and basically as we mentioned the ecosystem according to the Ramban, right, with one thing should feed the next, is when we say survival, there is a survival of the fittest, but the fittest means the fittest in Ruchnius, spiritually. The spiritually, survival of the spiritually fittest.
I like that.
Yes? Okay, we could adjust all the different theories out there, we can adjust them to be, we can tweak them to be true. Yes? Like, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we shall diet. Yes, okay. That's also a good one, yes. But that's that makes it, you tweak it, and then it becomes philosophically sound. Okay. 171, yes? We're continuing. After all, what does it mean to be free and independent if not to have the free use and employment of one's own personality? It's a good question. Rav Hirsch is asking, what does it mean to be free? If we're going to be, we're going to have chayrus, if we're going to have freedom, what does it mean to be free, if not to have the free use and enjoyment of one's own personality, to be able to use all of one's physical energies and mental abilities for one's own purposes? This is the essence of independence. This is very profound in itself. The essence of independence is to be able to act freely in the way you want to act. This alone gives the ego its personal worth and confers upon the individual his physical and spiritual self as his personal domain over which he alone may rule. Now, do you realize what this is? Basically, what Rav Hirsch is prescribing here is he's prescribing that every person should be egocentric. Is that correct? Did you read the same paragraph that I read? Mm-hmm. He's basically saying you should be self-serving. Is that what he's saying? But that certainly seems to be the simple meaning of these words. You don't think but you're saying that only because you don't expect Rav Hirsch to be philosophizing in that way. Exactly. So what do you think he's saying?
I think ultimately a person's good. We know that the only free person in this world is when it involves in Torah.
Beautiful.
But when a person totally understands what his status in the world is, he's going to reject the lower self. He's going to sacrifice the lower parts of himself. And there's no such thing as the sacrifices really means what getting rid of the lower part, and then he takes the regular part and serves.
It's so important what you're saying. It's unfortunately one of the greatest problems that we face today in Yiddishkeit, it would seem apparent. You hear what he's telling us? Freedom means to be able to do everything for yourself. Right? The free use and enjoyment of one's own personality. Well, how does that fit in line with the Torah? Is there a more restrictive body than the 613 mitzvahs that you know of in this world? Is there any other religion that has more restrictions than the 613 mitzvahs? What do you say, Rabbeinu Yaakov?
Well, apropos of your son's impending bar mitzvah, I recall Shalom speaking, and it may have been child before the age of 13 who's rushing to put on his tefillin because he wants to do it. Nobody's telling him to do it. He's not obligated to do it. The Torah isn't requiring him to do it. He wants to do it. That is the exercise, the lacking in maturity of free, independent use of personality. Once he reaches the age of bar mitzvah, he becomes obligated, and it's at that point harder to do it because he knows that the Torah obligates him to do it. However, I think what Rav Hirsch is saying is the highest level is when what he wants to do is also what he is commanded to do.
Excellent. If a person's perspective on Yiddishkeit, on the Torah, is that I'm doing it because I have to, then it doesn't go very far. Because eventually you'll say, I don't really have to, I can get away with not doing it. You start cutting corners, and before you know it, you're left with nothing. Yes. So, what Rav Hirsch is telling us is Ein ben chayrin el misha isek b'tera, as Drew mentioned, is the freedom that we're talking about is the freedom to be in absolute control of oneself, have absolute freedom, the ability to exercise absolute freedom, and yet to recognize that the best thing for me and for my soul and for my eternity is for me to keep the Torah. Willingly, voluntarily fulfill the Torah. If a person has the free use and enjoyment of one's own personality, then he could properly dedicate his life. Only then could he properly dedicate his life to the Rebbe Shalom. You see that an Eved, that a servant, is not obligated in many mitzvahs. Why? Because if he doesn't have that freedom, then he's not serving Hashem properly. He has this obligation to serve a master. He's on somebody else's time. We talked about this many times, that HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, this is the first month the Rebbe Shalom introduced us to freedom by way of saying this is the first month that you're going to be on your own time. Now, what you do with that time, that's your choice. If you then choose, by way of analyzing, by way of exploring, you choose then to serve the Rabbi Yishlam, then it's on your own volition. And that's absolute freedom. Ein ben chayren elamisha oisek b'teira. Oisek means not someone who's keeping the Torah. He's involved, he's toiling in Torah. The only person that's going to toil in Torah is who? A person who views it as the best thing possible for him. A person who views it that way, that's a different story. Let me tell you a beautiful story that I heard many years ago. There was a great rabbi, hopefully he's still alive, I don't know who he is, but there was a great rabbi who lived in the city of Yafo. And in the city of Yafo, he had a lot of children, and every single one of his children grew up to be tremendous Talmid Chacham. Or, if it was a woman, she was married to a Talmid Chacham, and in her own right, a Tzadekis. And one day, there was a visitor to this home, and he saw all the children sitting around the table, and they're all really very, very, very special and holy people, holy and pure. And he turned to the father of the family, and he said, "Tell me, what's your story?" It's a good question. "What's your story? How did you merit to have this family?" So listen to what he said, an amazing thing. He said, "I was a gang member in Tel Aviv. I was a thug. I was a thief. I did everything possible wrong. But it was all self-indulgence. I was out simply to fulfill my desires." You hear this? He says, "I was the worst of the worst." Now listen to this unbelievable story. He said he went to Tel Aviv. Why? He wanted to patronize a store that was selling indecent material. You hear this, David? He went to patronize a store that was selling indecent material. He went to the store, and of course, he said, in the window of the store, what did they have? Indecent pictures, yeah? He was standing in the doorway of the store, and he had turned around to see something, and along on the street, he saw a religious Jew. The religious Jew was walking by this store, and the religious Jew looked up, and he saw an indecent picture that was displayed in the window. And as if by reaction, he recoiled. He turned away as quick as he possibly could and said, "Oi!" Recognizing the deep effect that it was going to have, the negative effect it was going to have on his neshama. So he quickly tore himself away and looked elsewhere. So listen to what this man said. He says, "I was standing there and I observed this." And listen to what he said to himself. He said, "You know, I am an Epicurean person. I'm a person that indulges. I'm looking simply for pleasures of the world. How is it possible for a human being to have a pleasure sitting in front of his eyes and he has the ability to continue to look at it? It's free, free of charge. No one's going to stop him. How is it possible for him to rip himself away and not indulge?" So this man, who didn't know what restriction meant at all, in the least bit, he had no concept of restriction, he said the only way that he could possibly have restricted himself was only for one reason. If he has a pleasure that's greater than the pleasure that I'm having in this store, if he has a pleasure that's even greater, that he could get by somehow restricting himself. So this is what the man said. He said, "If there is a pleasure that's greater than I'm getting in this store, I want to get that pleasure." He says he was such a bal taiva. He was such a man of indulgence that he said, "If this man turns his head away, it's only because he has a greater pleasure. I want that pleasure." So he ran over to the man. And he asked him, "Tell me, why'd you turn away?" And the man began to explain to him, and one thing led to the other, and he began to study, and he began to pursue it, simply as the greatest pleasure. So Rav Matisyahu Solomon, the Mashgiach of Lakewood, said over the story, and he said these words. Ready? If your approach to Torah, if you ever came to this shir, even once in the last few months, and you only heard this, it's worthwhile. Hear what Rav Matisyahu said? If your approach to Torah is that this is the greatest pleasure in the world, then is it any doubt that he had many children, all Talmid Chachamim and holy and pure Jews? If that's your approach to Torah, that I am totally free to do whatever I want, but still I choose this because this is the best thing for me, this is the most pleasurable, this is the most worthwhile. If that's your approach to Torah, it's no wonder that's going to rub off on the children and everybody around you. This is exactly what Rav Hirsch is saying. We have the freedom. We have the ability to choose on our own. We were in Mitzrayim and we were restricted. And then we got that freedom. The ability to use all of one's independence for the enjoyment of one's own personality. What does it so happen to be that a Jew should be choosing a Bechar to Bechayim? You have a choice every day, every second. What is your choice? I use my freedom, but I choose Ubachar to Bechayim. I choose life. Now I want to share with you one other thought that I once heard from a very wise man. It's worthwhile to add this to this discussion. The thought is the following. A fellow, a rabbi, in one of the Kiruv organizations, I don't remember who it was. It might have been Rabbi Akiva Tatz. I don't remember. I heard this from one of the Rabbeim in a Kiruv organization. He said that one of the students came over to him and said, "Why are you restricting yourself like this? Ridiculous, so many restrictions. The Torah has so many restrictions. What's going on?" So you know what he said? He said, "You know that in order to be a professional tennis player, you have to practice a minimum of 6 hours a day. In order to be a professional basketball player, you have to practice a minimum of 8 hours a day. Is that restrictive? Could you imagine forcing yourself to be on the basketball court 8 hours a day? To be a concert pianist, you need to practice hours and hours a day. Why would someone restrict themselves? If you go over to the pianist and say, is this restrictive? You know what they would say? This is what they would say. Ready? This is what they would say. They would say, in order for me to have the freedom while I'm sitting in front of the piano to produce such beautiful music, the only way you could develop that freedom is by way of otherwise restricting yourself. But do I view that as a restriction? That's just, I have freedom, I don't have to pursue this, but I want to choose a greater freedom, so in order to choose a greater freedom, I restrict myself so that I'll have something better. A Jewish person's approach to the Torah is, are there restrictions? Yes. Do I view them as restrictions? No. I want the freedom to be able to, that my soul should soar in the heavenly realms, in the world of holiness. The only way for you to have the freedom of your soul to be unshackled, to have true independence, that your soul should be able to live forever, and to have the beauty and the pleasure of enjoying the Ziva Shechina in Olam Haba, the only way is how? By restricting myself here. I restrict myself for a finite amount of time, and I get the enormous freedom of eternity. Is that a restriction? It's no less or more a restriction than it is for a concert pianist to be playing so many hours a day. Yet they don't view it as a restriction. It's just the practice that's necessary to receive the ultimate freedom. A Jewish person is no different. And this is what Rav Hirsch is saying. To absolutely serve the Rebbeinu Shlom in the right way, one has to recognize, A, that you have true freedom. Now, once you have the true freedom, you're going to dedicate your entire being because you view it as the best possible thing for yourself. You will dedicate your entire being to the service of the Rebbeinu Shlom. And that's why it's so conducive in a country like United States of America or any democratic country where you're really free to do whatever you want. It's dangerous because you could easily get sucked in to the Western values. But at the other hand, it's very conducive for truly serving Hashem in the right way. In a sense, the Jewish people found it much easier to serve Hashem in the civilizations when they lived in places where they were very much persecuted and restricted. They didn't have that much freedom in the first place, right? They tried as best as they can to serve the Rebbeinu Shlomo. But here in America, we're afforded, in a Medina Shel Chesed, we're afforded tremendous freedom. We're given that freedom, and we take that freedom and we use it to serve the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That is really what is meant by the Chayrus that the Rebbeinu Shlomo gave us in Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we'll just conclude by finishing this paragraph here. This, in our view, is the reason why precisely in this offering, specifically the offering of the Korban Pesach that was given to us to be done right before we left Mitzrayim and get that Chayrus, it is so important that the flesh of the animal be eaten by its registrants, for whom the animal symbolizes their personalities. As we said, the animal being brought by the one who's bringing the carbon, it's an extension of himself. And it's viewed as the personality of the person himself. So, even before the act of offering, and for whom the act of offering represents the nullification of their existence and their total commitment to God. You want to have total commitment to Hashem? First, you have to express you're in absolute freedom. You have total freedom, now you give that up to the Rebbeinu Shlomo for the freedom, for the ultimate freedom of being able to have a much more eternal and holy existence. And therefore he says like this, Achilas HaPesach means the eating of the Korban Pesach symbolizes the freedom and independence that the people of Israel attain by devoting themselves to God. Meaning, we take the shechita of the Korban Pesach, the shechting is the giving up of our entire being, but the achila, the ingesting, is a sign of we're indulging, we're having our own personality, we're having our own enjoyment, but for the Rebbeinu Shlomo. So through Achilas HaPesach, through eating the Pesach, they regain their own selves after having been slaves, absorbed and lost in the personality of their master. A slave is absorbed and lost in the personality of his master. And therefore he says, if it was shechted, not for the people who are going to eat it, and not for the people who are counted in on it, that would imply outright enslavement. This is the main point that I want to bring out here. If you shecht an animal without indulging, so to speak, what you're saying is, I'm going to have the nullification of the being without bringing it to a higher level. That's what he means, outright enslavement. If you shecht it for people who are not going to eat it, who aren't counted in on it, then you have one element of it and not the other. You need both components in order to create this beautiful entity. And Shalayla Eichlav would imply self-sacrifice without regained independence. So for those who are not counted in on it, means it's, you're shechting it for people who didn't commit themselves to serving the Rebbeinu Shlomo. And if you shechted it for people who weren't going to eat it, who weren't supposed to eat it, so then you still have only one of the two components. You have the self-sacrifice, but you don't have the regained independence. So if you're not showing that you're indulging, you're not showing that you're enjoying it yourself for your own purpose, that you have your own freedom, then just shechting it is also not appropriate. And Bez Hashem will build on this next week when we talk a little further about this. And you're welcome to send up your source sheet so we could hold on to them and distribute them, Bez Hashem, next week. Everybody should have a wonderful Shabbos.